A Democrat held Michigan's first congressional district for nearly two decades. That was Bart Stupak. Then Republican Dan Benishak won it in 2010 during the Tea Party surge. Democrats have come close to winning it back two times since then, though. And with Benishak retiring, Democrats have an even better shot this time around. Good afternoon. I'm David Castleman, and today on IPR News Radio, a live forum with the two Democrats running, Jerry Cannon and Lon Johnson. And this is also your opportunity to put your questions to the candidates. You can call in this hour and ask them about the issues that matter to you. Here is the number, 800-681-5929. That's 800-681-5929. Jerry, thanks for being here today.
Hey, my pleasure, Dave.
We're still waiting on Lon Johnson to arrive. Jerry Cannon is a former Kalkaska County Sheriff. He ran for this seat. This is the first congressional district. 2 years ago, he didn't win. But he's going after it again. Jerry, thanks for coming on.
Hey, my pleasure.
We're going to start off today's program with a 90-second opening statement from you, Jerry, while we wait for Lon to arrive. 90 seconds whenever you're ready.
Well, despite the anxiety over the current election cycle, I still think our best days are ahead of us. To ensure this, I think we must elect candidates that reflect the values of Northern Michigan. Our family has been in Kalkaska County for over 100 years. And Liz and I have been married for 46. We've lived, worked, and raised our family in Kalkaska for 40 years. And now we have grandchildren in the same schools that our children attended. And we know what it's like to work two jobs and to make ends meet, and how families are struggling to face the issues of shelter and heat and food and putting gas in their car. And we need candidates that are willing to admit that they don't have all the answers, willing to listen to people, anticipate problems, try to prevent bad things from happening, and serve the best interests of regular people, and who will make health, safety, and welfare a priority. We need someone who will work to improve the quality of our education, of our greater regional economy, but never at the expense of our environment, and someone who will embrace innovation and the opportunities that that will provide for our young people to stay in this area. To ensure this happens, we need to stick with reality and work on the basics. We begin doing this by electing candidates with a track record of getting things done. As we all know, people are frustrated and angry and disgusted with the establishment, the insiders, the big money, and all the self-interest. And if we keep electing the same kind of people and expect a different result, shame on us. My view is a congressional candidate needs to have the right skills and education and experience in three functional areas: government, leadership, and civic engagement. And as a lifelong public servant, I have unparalleled real-world experience ranging from local to the global level, and the skills to comprehend and manage a billion-dollar budget, and the ability to work and bring disparate groups together to find common ground. I feel this prepares me well for helping to restore the confidence in Congress and still put Michigan families first and foremost in everything I do.
Jerry, you were talking about that there's anxiety over the presidential primary. What are you getting at there?
Well, what I think a lot of people, and you can just see it in obviously with the presumptive nominee Donald Trump, that a lot of people have a lot of angst and a lot of anxiety, and he is somehow or another appealed to that that anger and bringing people out that and even with Bernie Sanders, people are coming out and getting involved in the process that never did before because they're just fed up with the way things have been done. We'll just say for the last 6 years for sure, this is the most do nothing Congress since Harry Truman.
And what kind of anxiety are you talking about?
They just don't like, the idea that Congress cannot accomplish anything. It's nothing but a stalemate. It's a standoff. And we should be focused on things like improving the lives of the people in our districts and as a nation. And we're not doing that.
So how would you address those issues?
Well, I can tell you that in my experience, I had to work with some very difficult situations in my career in the military overseas. I had to work with groups that had centuries-long disagreements, people with ethnic differences and religious differences and obviously political differences. And I was able, over time, working with those groups to bring them to the table and work on a resolution of some very important, for example, human rights issues to advance the solutions to those kinds of problems. And so I think I can do the same thing in Congress. I have this ability to bring people together to find the common ground. The solutions are in the middle. And I know if everybody wants to stake out, it's all or nothing, stake out their claims on the extremes. That's what's going on now. We're not going to get anything done. You got to be willing to compromise.
We're going to take a call. Let's take Gretchen from Traverse City. She has a question about single-payer health care. Gretchen, you're on the line. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I'm just wondering if you support the single-payer health care system, and if you do, what are your plans to get that done in Congress?
Well, I think I support that as a long-term goal or objective, but obviously we got to kind of crawl, walk, and run. The Affordable Care Act is obviously a compromise. It was, it's an imperfect law. I think what we normally do in situations like this is we amend it or we revise it or rewrite it or whatever. We certainly don't repeal it without having something good to take its place and make sure that people have access to affordable health care.
Let's take another call. Let's take Joel from Long Lake Township. He wants to talk about how they have served their communities over the year. Joel, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you, Mr. General Cannon? Joel Kassler here. I just wanted to make sure that I had the opportunity to hear the candidates' short synopsis of the service of their communities over the last 20 years or so. And I don't know if the people that are listening have a good, clear edict of what you folks have done over this amount of time.
Jerry, go ahead.
Well, I've been a lifelong public servant my entire professional life, starting with enlisting in the Marine Corps and 2 weeks out of high school. One of the things that I learned was that if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So being involved in my community, I've done a variety of things. Obviously, I was the sheriff in Kalkaska, but I'm involved in a charter member of the Kiwanis Club, many civic and public organizations. I was on the school board. I'm currently serving on the hospital board. I chair a Parks and Recreation Committee. And as sheriff, I did many varied different roles in the community to try to make things better. I think we all have a responsibility to improve the life in our community and not just be someone that enjoys the beauty that we have in this area, but taking part in making it a better place to live, work, and play, and of course, raise our family. I'm also involved with an environmental council in my township. So all those kinds of things, I think, add to the value of my experience, understanding what makes the things work at a local level.
You are listening to a live forum on IPR News Radio with the Democrats running for Michigan's 1st Congressional District, Jerry Cannon and Lon Johnson, who is here. Lon, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I want to make sure that you have the opportunity to make an opening statement. So here's your 90 seconds.
Terrific. Hey, well, you know, we have an obligation here to create a place where we can stay and succeed in northern Michigan. We're losing way too many of our children and our grandchildren to downstate or out of state for educational or job opportunities. And we can create a place where we can stay and succeed, but that's going to take a member of Congress with a vision, a 5, 10, and 15-year vision, who's dedicated to investing in and protecting our best assets, our people, our land, and our Great Lakes. You know, we've always led the world here in northern Michigan. You know, we led the world in international trade, fur trade. We led the world in mining, copper and iron ore. Then we led the world in lumber. The question for us is what's next, and let's get to it.
You know, I want to ask you guys who you each voted for in the Democratic primary in March. Lon?
I voted for Hillary Clinton.
I voted for Bernie Sanders.
Now we know that Hillary Clinton is the presumptive nominee. So where do you stand in agreement with Hillary Clinton's positions, and where do you differ? Lon, why don't you go first?
I just think that Hillary Clinton offered the experience and the ability to not only to be the best president to get things done.
Jerry?
I think Bernie has raised some wonderful issues about the shortcomings facing this nation. Obviously, it's a visionary kind of a role. Obviously, we all would aspire to see those kinds of things happen. Understanding that it's the goal, it's kind of an incremental process to get there, but it's laying out a direction that we want to go. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, has great experience, great knowledge, and in my view, has displayed some poor judgment at times. And so obviously, we'll see how that all plays out as some of these investigations kind of reveal themselves, and we'll see if it is what it appears to be at this point in the game.
All right, let's get back to the callers. Lynn in Traverse City has a question about supporting the Democratic nominee. Lynn, you're on the air. Lynn, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello?
What's your question, Lynn?
Okay. My question is, the Democrats have just had a very fierce fought primary nationally, and it looks like we're going to have another fought primary for the congressional seat here. And I want to know if Jerry will promise to help Lon, should Lon be the winner, defeat the Republican candidate, and vice versa, because it's very important. Bernie and Hillary are going to work together to defeat Donald Trump. And I want to make sure that both of these men will promise to work together to defeat whomever the Republicans nominate.
Thank you, Lynn. Jerry?
Well, I'm a lifelong Dem, and so I am committed to the Democratic Party, and I will work to make sure that we are victorious, because I think the party represents the best in people and the things that we all aspire to. So, yes, I would work to make sure that we win in November.
Lon, will you support Jerry Cannon if the reverse happened?
Absolutely. And, Jerry, you would agree to support my candidacy should I win?
I think that's what I just said.
Terrific. And I would be the first in line to support Jerry and should Jerry win.
All right, let's go to Kiera. Kiera, you're on the line. What's your question?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What's your question?
My question is actually for Mr. Cannon. I'd like to know if he considers himself anti-choice and the role he thinks the government should play in regulating women's bodies.
Thank you, Kiera. Jerry, where do you stand on abortion?
I'm not sure I heard the entire question. This is kind of loud. These headsets.
The question was, where do you stand on abortion in general?
The abortion issue is obviously a very important one to me. It's a moral issue to me. I'm all about the sanctity of life. I've struggled with these issues being in the military. I struggled with these issues in our family with end-of-life decisions. And I think that it's absolutely important that the government stay out of this kind of business. I think it's certainly a decision that people have to make on their own. Obviously, a very difficult decision. And if whatever decision is, I think we need to make sure that people are provided for. If a child is born out of the decision, that the child is provided for, both with education and with health and food and all those kinds of things. Me personally, at the end of the day, my preference is I am pro-life, but I am not one to try to force my opinion on anybody. It's all about people having the right to do what they think they want to do. And for me, if I had the opportunity to try to influence that, I would always hope that the decision we made in my keeping with the sanctity of life.
So you're okay with legal abortion?
In certain cases.
Lon, where do you stand on this issue?
I'm pro-choice. I believe the decision should be left between a woman and her physician.
In all cases?
I think at the end of the day, that decision should be made between a woman and her physician. I'm pro-choice, unequivocally.
I want to shift to talk about some economic issues. One of the things that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, their campaigns have brought up over the last few months, is the question of free trade. This is, they argue that free trade deals like NAFTA, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, have harmed American manufacturing, made it tougher to get a leg up, especially in states like Michigan that rely on manufacturing. Lon, do you favor free trade deals like NAFTA?
Look, the trade deal that's relevant right now is this TPP deal that's coming down the pike. I'm opposed to that. Look, the American worker can compete against anyone in the world. We have, and we've always won, and we will continue to win. We are the best skilled trades workers in the world. However, when those deals are negotiated, I believe that they're not negotiated in ways that our American workers can fairly compete. And so that's why I oppose this TPP trade deal.
Jerry, where do you stand on free trade in general?
Well, I think what we want, I think what everybody wants is fair trade. And these agreements have not obviously borne out to be fair, and especially in Michigan, but across the country as far as our workforce. And so I agree, we can compete, but we got to have fair trade. And I also think we should never allow the president to make these kinds of deals. I think we want to make sure we don't want to fast track anything. We want to, based on the experience with NAFTA, I think that we need to have the Congress be involved in reviewing that process to make sure that everybody's best interest is represented.
Lon, what specific parts of the TPP concern you?
Well, currency manipulation, first off. You can have the best trade deal in the world, and if you don't address how a foreign country can manipulate its currency to gain trade advantage, it's the trade agreement's not worth the paper it's written on. Second, I don't like how the agreement was conducted and put together in private, in a very confidential manner, and the American people had no idea what, and still today don't know fully what's in this trade deal.
Let's take a question from Tom from Elk Rapids on line two. Tom, you're on the air. What's your question, Tom?
Yes. The question is, do either of the candidates believe the national debt, which real soon is going to be hitting $20 trillion, do they see that as a major problem? And if so, what kind of steps would they be willing to support in order to reduce it?
Thank you. Jerry?
Well, I think the last number I saw was the national debt was like $19 trillion. And I think the first thing to remember is like when we buy a house and we have a mortgage on our house, it's not like what we took the mortgage out for. By the time you pay it off, it's like double that plus. And so $19 trillion in debt is a serious issue and concern, and it does have an effect. And there's a lot of reasons that cause that. There are times when you want to have some debt, maybe we should have paid for the last 15 years of war with, some kind of way to pay that debt off rather than just continue to let it accumulate. But the fix is a long-term solution. I mean, we have accumulated this debt relatively recently, and it's going to take 25-plus years that if we are disciplined enough to do the kinds of things that we need to do, hold spending, maybe raise some revenue, and dedicate it to paying off that debt to bring it down. So, yeah, I think it's a big problem. I think it's an issue that needs to be addressed. I would support efforts in that regard to make sure that we're not burdening our children with that kind of debt. And when you talk about the national debt, it begins with the deficit in the budget. I mean, that's one place where you can start. But we've also got besides the housing debt, the next big debt people have is student loans. So $1.2 trillion. And then we get down to credit cards. And, I mean, we've grown accustomed to spending more than we can afford.
Lon?
We have to attack this debt with everything we've got. This is a problem. $19-20 trillion with a T is a big problem. And I think if we don't address that and make some tough choices, it has the ability to swamp everything that we care about. I think we have to address it by a number of ways. Number one, we have to go through and look at our tax code. We are shifting the tax code. Over the last 20 years, we've shifted the tax code from corporations onto working in middle class families. While we've allowed corporations that move their money overseas to avoid the tax, avoid the IRS. Now, if you and I tried that, we'd go to jail. We're staring down billions of dollars. Short fund from corporations doing that. We've got to put an end to that immediately.
One of the things that I've been able to do since covering this campaign is to go out into the community and talk straight to voters about what concerns them. So I collected some of these. So let's hear one of these voters.
Hi, I'm Callie Jensen from Traverse City, and I'd really like to see what can be done to shut down Line 5.
So let's talk a bit about Line 5. That's the oil pipeline that's crossing the Straits of Mackinac. Environmental leaders say it's unsafe. Enbridge, the company that runs it, says that it's fine. They say it has a sterling safety record as it crosses the Straits. Lon, we'll start with you. What's a specific action that you would take related to Line 5?
Well, I believe that it needs to be. I agree with the caller. We need to shut down Line 5 immediately at the Straits of Mackinac. We've got a 63-year-old oil pipeline running through the Straits of Mackinac. With those currents, it's dangerous. I think there's two or three number of actions that we can take. Number one, we need communities to get involved. We now have over 51 resolutions passed, many from them at the county and the township level. We need to continue getting those passed. That's in our power. When these communities speak up, we send a message loud and clear to state and federal officials. Number two, we need to work to pass. You know, we just had a legislation passed yesterday in the House of Representatives calling for greater inspections. And number three, we need the governor to make sure that the pipeline company is being 100% transparent with our. It's in the governor and attorney general's hand. Has the ability to shut this thing down. We need 100% transparent on Enbridge, and we're not getting that.
Jerry, what's a specific action you would take on Line 5?
Well, you know, first of all, it is a moral, emotional, and economic issue. I don't think we should politicize it. What that does is create another division in the role that people and governments can play in solving this problem. And so, obviously, we're a nation of laws, rule of law. If the governor and the attorney general said shut it down, I am sure Enbridge would say we'll see you in court. And so this is without a doubt. I think we need to have the effort that the communities are putting together is about let's have an independent inspection of this pipeline. I'm told that if you take good care of a pipeline, it could last forever, but we don't know that, and because of the lack of transparency. And treating the information as if it's some kind of a top secret, and in the shadows of the event that happened in Kalamazoo, we don't trust, we don't believe, we want to know, we want to verify, and so I think we need to have that independent inspection and find out what it says. So I think people should do everything that they're doing to try to raise awareness and let their concerns be known. At the same time, I think there needs to be a parallel initiative to sit down with Enbridge, because every bit of that product can get to where it needs to go an alternate way. So this is not some kind of strategic pipeline. It is not in that category at all. And so I think we need to force them to come to the table and talk to us about what is the timeline to shut this down, barring that we don't have a disaster. Obviously, if there's a disaster, that's the end of it, and we don't want that at all.
You are listening to IPR News Radio and a live forum with the Democrats running for Northern Michigan seat in U.S. Congress. Jerry Cannon and Lon Johnson are here. And you can join us by calling in with a question at 800-681-5929. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Jerry in Traverse City. Jerry, what's your question?
My question is for General Cannon. General Cannon, I'm aware that you have your fundraising has only reached a level of about 14,000, whereas Lon Johnson's campaign has an account of about $1 million. I was wondering what would you say about whether or how you're a viable candidate given this fundraising discrepancy?
Well, I'd love to talk about fundraising. I think it's the poison that has ruined our entire political process. And so, we will have the money that we need to run an effective campaign. There's all kinds of ways to do this. And the fact that, Lon has raised $1 million, I would ask, where does that money come from? My money comes from supporters that live and work in this district. And so for me, it's I think we're viable. Here's the point. 2 years ago when we ran, we raised over $1 million. And plus there is another $1 million that was spent on our campaign. The effort to get my name recognition up to a level where people know who I am when I walk into a store, we've already accomplished that. We don't need to spend that kind of money again. So I think we are a viable candidate, and we are an alternative to all the things that are wrong with our political process. And the root of all that is money. It's toxic. It has ruined everything. And I am certainly not a big money guy. As a matter of fact, being a police officer and being a general officer in the military, it was absolutely contrary to our nature to do anything like that. So if people want to give to me, they do. And if they don't want to give to me, that's okay too. We'll make do with what we have.
Lon, do you think that money poisons the political process?
I think we need a complete overhaul of our campaign finance system. It's disgusting. We've got to overhaul Citizens United, and we need to address these campaigns. You know, having members of Congress or candidates spend hours upon hours on the phone asking people for money is a horrible system. That being said, you know, our campaign is proud to have you know, the support of thousands of individual contributors from the district. It does take campaign funds to go out there and raise it, and we're proud to have thousands of contributors from this district who are chipping in $5, $10, $25, $100 at a time. Now, in addition to contributions, we now have over 3,000 endorsements for our campaign. We've Congressman Bart Stupak and Gary McDowell have endorsed our campaign, as have 12 current or former state legislators from the 1st Congressional District.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's hear from John on line one. He has another question about abortion. John, what's your question?
My question is this. One in three Democrats identify as pro-life, and they see the Democratic Party as the best vehicle for that because we embrace the whole person, not just the fetus. Do you support language in the Democratic platform that welcomes pro-life Democrats into full participation into the party? We've lost so many seats, so many governorships, and both houses of Congress since the party's been quite restrictive on the abortion issue.
Thank you, John. Lon, why don't you answer that?
Well, I think there's room for all sorts of opinions inside our Democratic Party. However, you know, again, I believe that choice should be made between a woman and a physician. But there's room for, you know, there's room for all sorts of viewpoints within our party.
How would you make room?
Well, you know, we have a platform process, you know, at the party, both at the county and at the state level. And if folks want to come there and address that and seek to get that on the platform, then there's a process for doing that.
Jerry, are there room for pro-life Democrats in the Democratic Party going forward?
Well, I would certainly hope so. I mean, I've been accused of a lot of different things because I'm pro-life that I probably really am not a Democrat, or because I'm pro-military and law enforcement that I'm probably not a Democrat. It doesn't make any sense. There's all kinds of. I think we have so many more things that we are all alike about than not. But these are wedge issues that sort of separate people, and you got to understand the reason that people do those kinds of things.
Well, we're going to take one more question, and then we're going to take a short break. Let's go to Lindsay on line two. Lindsay, what's your question for the candidates? Lindsay, can you hear me? So let's go to another issue, another Great Lakes issue, which is the Sioux Locks. You know, people have been pushing to build a new lock at Sault Ste. Marie for 30 years. 30 years. A lot of congresspeople have come and gone in Michigan during that time. The issue is that a number of people are saying we need a second lock to handle the largest freighters. Right now, there's one lock that can handle the 1,000 footers. If it were to go down, the Department of Homeland Security says it would be an economic disaster. What should be done, Jerry?
Well, I think they're doing a study now, and you're right. It has been 30 years. But it's never been funded. Let's do the study. Everybody knows. We had a little hiccup in the last 18 months where that lock malfunctioned and things kind of backed up. Everybody had, I think it was the smaller lock.
That was the MacArthur lock.
Yeah, the MacArthur lock had to have some repairs, and everybody had to go through the pole lock. And so what ends up happening is there was a backlog. And so every time those ships are sitting in the water waiting for their turn to kind of pass through, it's costing money. And so I think when they do the study, they're going to realize, yes, we do need to do this. We need that kind of redundancy just to make sure that we can do what we need to do. And it not just affects the Great Lakes or the Midwest. It affects the economy of the entire country and Canada for that matter. And so it needs to be done. We need to get the study done so we know what we're talking about, and you can make a good business case for it, and then allocate the money. And this is a great segue into the need for us to address a whole host of infrastructure issues. But that one would create jobs for 10 years. It'd probably be, you know, between a half and $1 billion worth of work.
Okay. Let's
there's
let's
been a lot of times. There's been study after study done here. There's been hearing after hearing done. We need a member of Congress that's going to go to Washington, D.C. and bring this to the forefront of the attention of the U.S. government. We do that through a number of ways. Obviously, the Corps of Engineers and Department of Homeland Security's recent report, I think, should be evidence enough. It's time that we start to bring other industries to Congress, and we show other members of Congress precisely what would happen should this lock not be built, or should we have a shutdown. We're talking about not just a regional recession. We're talking about a regional depression. Whole entire industries would be basically shut down should this Sioux lock fail. Now, we have to bring that attention to our fellow legislators rather aggressively and through the media, through Congress, through the administration. And you need a member of Congress who's done with hearings and done with studies and will put their wheel to their shoulder to the wheel and get this done.
Let's take a short break. We're going to be back in a few minutes. You're listening to a live call-in show with the Democrats running for Michigan's 1st Congressional District, Jerry Cannon and Lon Johnson. Stick around. This is IPR News Radio.
You're listening to special election coverage from Interlaken Public Radio, the broadcast and online news service of Interlaken Center for the Arts. If you'd like the chance to pose your own questions to the candidates during this forum, give us a call, 800-681-5929, or you can post your questions on Facebook and Twitter. We're at IPR News Radio. Your weather forecast for Northwest Lower Michigan. Today, mostly sunny, a chance of thunderstorms this afternoon, with highs in the low 70s to 80 degrees. In the overnight tonight, thunderstorms are likely, lows in the 60s. On Saturday, tomorrow, partly sunny, then a chance of thunderstorms, highs in the low 70s to low 80s. Sunday, sunny, highs in the 60s. And on Monday, there's a chance of thunderstorms, highs in the upper 60s to low 70s. And Tuesday, mostly sunny, highs in the low 70s. This is IPR News Radio.
And welcome back to special election coverage on IPR News Radio. Good afternoon. I'm David Castleman, and this is a live forum with the Democrats running in the 1st Congressional District. Jerry Cannon, Lon Johnson are both here. You can join us by calling in at 800-681-5929. I want to pivot back to a question about the economy before we move on to some questions about foreign policy. Lon, in many places in this district, especially here in Traverse City, I mean, but this is a district that spans all the way across the UP as well. But either way, in a lot of places in this district, economies rely on tourism, a lot of service jobs, and this kind of economy, it doesn't produce a lot of high-paying year-round jobs. You see it in places like Traverse City. What kind of economy would bring those types of jobs here?
Well, I think three things that we need to do. Number one, we need to bring high-speed internet and mobile cell phone service to all our communities. You know, we're massively growing as an economy where people can live and work wherever they choose. And much of our economic activity, our growth here in this country does come from, you know, internet-derived activities. And we need to bring high-speed internet and mobile cell phone service to all our communities, not to mention how our children are left behind because they don't have internet access fully at their home or at their school. Number two, we need to bring passenger rail service back to northern Michigan. You know, for decades, we used these lines to export value lumber. Now we need those same lines to import value people. And third, we need to you know, we have 21% of the world's fresh water right here. We need to show the world how to use and protect fresh water. We need to create a freshwater institute and show the world how to use and protect fresh water. You know, the same way that Stanford University created Palo Alto and Silicon Valley or Nashville aggregated country music. We have 21% of the world's fresh water right here. We need to create a freshwater institute and show the world how to use and protect fresh water.
What kinds of jobs would those be at a freshwater institute? What would it do?
Well, it would show, you know, for an example, we know for a fact in the coming decades, billions with a B will be spent on companies and governments trying to figure out how to use and protect fresh water. How do we use less water to make more goods? How do we use less water to grow more agriculture? How do we use less water to move more troops? Now, if we can have the engineering firms, the legal firms, and the manufacturing firms that provide the answers to that new challenge, We can create an entirely new economy here and protect our Great Lakes.
Jerry, I'm going to give you a sec to answer in a minute. First, I want to make sure that our listeners know that this is a live call-in show on IPR News Radio with the congressional candidates in Michigan's 1st Congressional District. You can call in with your question at this number, 800-681-5929, 800-681-5929. 5929. Jerry,
if I could just close out, you know, Northern Michigan always led the world. We need to lead the world again. And in that next industry, I believe, is showing the world how to use and protect fresh water.
Jerry, how can we bring high-paying year-round jobs to places like Kalkaska or places like Marquette? How can we bring those types of jobs to this district?
Well, I think, first of all, we got to play to our strengths. And obviously, we're not in a position like Southeast Michigan where there's a lot of manufacturing and what have you. But, you know, the economic engine of Northern Michigan is small businesses. And so we need to keep an eye constantly on producing our own homegrown entrepreneurs and help startups and fast-growing businesses that are already in our community. The idea that we're going to get a big factory to come in and solve problems, the idea that we're going to get an Air Force base back, that's not going to happen. We got some pretty good federal policies that strengthen. We need some federal policies that can do more to help strengthen Main Street, not Wall Street, and keeping interest rates low so they can borrow and so they can build and expand and hire employees. And the second and third order effect of that is to that disposable income creates demand, and more people will support other industries. The idea of having railroads, I mean, that train left the station. I mean, there is not a railroad in the country or in the world that isn't subsidized. So that's not going to create. We need to be talking about things right now that are going to create jobs, not 10, 15, 20 years from now.
Lon, is that gone, or railroads?
No, in fact, right now, they're right here in Traverse City, they're talking about a line going from Traverse City to Ann Arbor. Now, to say that that won't increase our economy here is just false.
If there is money to waste, you could throw it towards something like that. We don't have enough money to do some of the fundamental things. Just look at our infrastructure. And to have freshwater institutes, there's already 22 watershed councils, not counting what our universities are doing. I mean, those aren't things that are going to do anything to create jobs in the near term. And so all of this is intertwined. But we obviously need to play to our strength, forestry, tourism, but railroads, I mean,
You'd have to subsidize them.
Yeah,
we don't have money to do that.
Railroads precisely play to that strength. We know our assets here, our people, our land, and our Great Lakes. If we can bring more people up here, that will definitely improve our economy.
Okay, let's go to the phones.
We've built an interstate system. People get here quite quickly, not by train. It might be a novelty. There will probably be some people that would want to do that. It goes nowhere. It goes to Petoskey, and it goes back.
All right, let's get back to the phones. We have Scott on line one. Scott, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hey, thank you for taking my call, and good afternoon, gentlemen. Number one, I learned in the Army for not 10 minutes earlier late. I'd like to know why Mr. Johnson was late to this. Number two, I'd like to know how a guy downstate is going to represent me, a northerner. I keep hearing him say we and ours. Who's he talking about? Is he talking about Richmond, Michigan, or is he talking about North Michigan?
I couldn't exactly hear his question.
Lon, I think he was saying that he doesn't believe you really live up here. How do you respond to the assumption that you're not from northern Michigan?
I live in Kalkaska County. I'm the fifth generation of my family to live in Kalkaska County.
And why were you late?
I was driving down the road, and I was behind a moped, if you believe it or not.
A moped.
This is 32. There's 32 counties here, and we have we drive a camper. And we go from town to town and run town halls, doing meetings. And there was a moped, and that's why I was about 3 minutes late here.
Thank you. Let's shift to some foreign policy stuff. I want to make sure we get in there. Because as Congressman, you would be, deciding on what to fund, how to fund the military, and would play an important role in guiding foreign policy. On the question on the issue of ISIS, Jerry, there's a lot of muscular talk about the United States getting more involved in Syria and Iraq. The president has kind of come out against getting more involved in Syria. What do you think? Should we be more involved in fighting ISIS in the Middle East?
Well, it's certainly a very emotional issue. I can tell you that in my experience in Iraq, had we left a division's worth of troops there, ISIS never would have expanded into Iraq. But that wasn't meant to be. We couldn't get a status of forces agreement. We were going to subject our people to the Iraqi law. What I think we need to always keep at the forefront, and the best question to answer is not how to get into something like this, is how do you get out of it? What do you want to accomplish? Because these things take on a life of their own. We've been in Iraq and Afghanistan for 15 years. And so diplomacy, diplomacy, diplomacy. The last thing that we want to do, and we can be leaders, is to commit our troops to a situation that is untenable. And in our particular case, we can be the leader. We can be part of a coalition. There's all kinds of things that we can do without putting boots on the ground. And we do have boots on the ground. And they have every right to defend themselves, but they're not involved in offensive action.
Should we have more? There are a number of special forces operatives in the region. Should we have more on the ground?
Special forces? Yes, I say. And advisors to advise. I mean, this has got to be an issue that is resolved in the Middle East. Now, some would say we created this and what we did going into Iraq and
do
Afghanistan.
Do you think that?
I don't think so. No, but the idea that this has to be the Middle East has to want a solution to this problem more than we want a solution to this problem. And so keeping everybody at the table, had we stayed in Iraq, we'd have kept people at the table. They never would have came into Iraq. And there's some great organizations. I've worked, with the Kurds, and I've worked with the Shia, and I've worked with the Sunni. And, there's some great long-term historical differences that have to be overcome. But keeping them at the table is better than not keeping them at the table.
Should we be more involved in fighting ISIS in Syria and Iraq?
Well, ISIS is a very real threat. I was in Iraq in 2005 as a civilian, working with the Sunni and Shiite populations. Until the Middle East, until they can get past their tribal and religious differences, there's going to continue to be conflict. The Middle East countries have to want peace before our work can have a substantive effect. That being said, ISIS is a real threat. We have to that has to be dealt with. There are people, every day, ISIS and other terrorists trying to figure out ways to get into the United States and to do us harm. They have to be found, and they have to be found and exterminated.
exterminated?
Well, they have to be found. ISIS, these folks that are planning attacks on us have to be found and they have to be extinguished.
Do you think the United States created this situation right now in Iraq and Syria?
Look, there's no easy answer here, you know, whether we created it with our invasion or were those existence, you know, whether those elements were there beforehand. That's, you know, what we're dealing with today is a situation that's very unstable. And we have to work to, first off, the Middle Eastern countries have to want to do this themselves. We have to create a Middle Eastern NATO, if you will. These countries have to want to create stability and peace in before any work that we do will have an effect.
We're going to go back to the phones in just a moment. Let me remind you that you are listening to a live forum with the congressional candidates for Michigan's 1st Congressional District on IPR News Radio. You can join in by calling in at 800-681-5929. We ask that you have a little patience. We are having some technical difficulties, but we are going to be able to take your call. 800-681-5929. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy on line two. Kathy, what's your question?
Okay. This one is for Lon Johnson. And I'm wondering right now, especially in rural areas, you know, especially in northern Wisconsin, there seems to be inequity in how our schools are funded and supported, especially when it comes down to internet access. And I'd like some specifics on how internet access to the schools and to help our students and kind of level the playing field for those areas that might not get enough teachers, might not be able to offer courses. What would you do to make sure the internet access and technology was there so that no matter what zip code a child lives in, they get an equal education?
Thank you, Kathy.
Well, couldn't agree more. Well, first off, you need a member of Congress that is going to work with the, you know, specifically with the FCC to make sure that we have high-speed internet access to all our communities. You know, the internet just wasn't invented last year. But in way too many of our communities, we have very low levels of low-level speed or very very difficult access to the internet. We need to increase that. Now, we do that through a number of ways, but primarily we have to have a member of Congress that's going to work with other rural legislators around the country to go to the FCC and to make sure that AT&T, Verizon, so other telecom providers are made to provide internet to our rural communities. You know, our forefathers did this. They brought electricity to northern Michigan. They did so because they went to the power companies and said, you can have a monopoly. You can have the right of ways, but in exchange, you need to wire up our rural communities. We need the same initiative to bring high-speed internet and mobile cell phone service to all our communities, and it will have the same economic effect. I agree with the caller. Look, the best ideas no longer have to come from a Harvard dorm room or some Silicon Valley coffee shop. You know, a child in Kalkaska or Alpena or, you know, Ishpeming can come up and come up with the same ideas. This is a world economy now, but far too many of our children are being left behind.
Who will pay to get the lines where they need to go?
Well, for a prime example, you know, northern Michigan is doing an excellent effort of bringing high-speed internet right now to the entire UP. You know, we're looking at about $120,000 per site with a $10,000 annual maintenance fee to bring high-speed internet to the entire communities. I think there is a market there if the consumers have that option. I know in my house, I mean, I do everything but put a tinfoil hat on my head to get an extra bar. That's, you know, this is 2016. The internet just wasn't invented yesterday, and our children need access to it.
How do you work out of there then if it's difficult to get service?
Well, I have to pay a lot of money. I have brought in satellites. I brought in Verizon hotspots and so on and so forth.
Jerry, what do you think we should be doing to provide equal access to high-speed internet?
Well, I think when you talk about public education, I think that's the focus of the question. I think we got to make sure that we have equality in rural schools, and we don't. For example, a community that I grew up in down in Detroit, same number of students that are in Kalkaska, same number of buildings, but they don't have to spend $1 million on transportation. So that money comes off the top. So Kalkaska spends about $1 million to get the kids to school because it's pretty much a countywide district. We have to plow snow. We got to heat these buildings. All that money comes off the top. So there's not enough for our schools. So there's not an equity in the classroom. And so, you know, how you do these things in rural areas, I mean, the marketplace will say that there's no money in this. We need to incentivize it. And so, you know, we didn't have mail. We didn't have electric. We didn't have phones. When I first moved up there, you know, I was on an eight-person party line, and you had to listen for your ring. We could do the same thing. We need to incentivize this. And the best way to do it, if they've got electricity, we need to figure out a way to get the electric companies. You know, we want you to do this, and we will help make it possible. We'll keep you afloat until there's enough subscribers for this thing to pay for itself. And that's how we did everything else. We can do that through co-ops.
Let's take a question from Jim from Traverse City on line two. Jim, what's your question?
Jim,
can you start over again? What's your question, Jim?
I am a Democrat. I certainly will be supporting one or other of you. But from listening to you, it seems like you're running for the legislature rather than for the federal Congress, talking almost exclusively about projects to benefit our local community. I want people in Congress who are going to take good positions on the federal economy, on foreign affairs and all those things. And since the Republicans have such a lock on the House in Washington, how can you, as part of the minority party, if you do get elected, how can you really have any influence on what goes in Washington?
Jerry, why don't you go after that?
Well, a great question, and you're right. A lot of these issues are state legislative issues, but I think Washington and Lansing can be great partners. The best answers are always at the local level. In terms of being in the minority, we're hoping that's not the case. But if it is, you have to deal with the reality. What I would suggest, if it doesn't already exist, that we create a rural caucus. And irregardless of they are Republican or Democrat or independent, that we come together for the benefit of the rural areas of the country. And there are many of them. And it could be a block of votes that come to play in critically important issues. If we can get past the letter R or the letter D or the letter I. And so I've had these wonderful experiences in both of my careers to bring people together, to find common ground, to advance issues. And I've done this not only locally, but globally. And so you got to understand what the ground rules are and be willing to set aside the wedge issues and say, what are we are here to improve the lives of the people in this district. It's not about what we want to do. It's about what can we do to improve the lives of the people of Northern Michigan. And so, you know, that's the goal. If you start thinking about how do I stay here, you know, you've lost your way. It's all about taking care of the people of this district.
Okay, let's go to one of the things that our last caller was getting at, which is how do you work as a member of a minority party, assuming that the Republicans still control the House in, you know, January 2017?
Well, it's,
how can you work with them?
Well, it's first off, you've got to set aside partisan differences. You go to Washington, and your job is to deliver for your district. You have to form alliances. You have to engage. And you have to put aside partisan differences. You know, that's the problem, you know, we had with the last 6 years with Congressman Benishek. But that's not what we saw with Congressman Stupak. Congressman Stupak has looked at, you know, and I have had many talks. He knows that I'll be a bipartisan legislator. And he knows that I'll go to Washington and continue the work that he did. You know, he came and went to Washington and worked, again, not looking at party labels. You know, we've got members of Congress that go to Washington, and pretty soon before we know it, all they care about is their reelection or where the next check is going to come from. We need a member of Congress that's going to go to Washington, roll up their sleeves, and work with people or any administration, regardless of party, to bring back the needed funds for what we need to do to develop a place where we can stay and succeed.
Our time, unfortunately, is almost up. So we're going to have a 90-second closing statement. I want to make sure that you guys have time to do that. Lon Johnson, why don't you go first?
Sure. You know, I'm asking for your vote. because we need to create a Northern Michigan where our families can stay and succeed. We are losing too many of our kids and our grandkids to downstate or out of state for education or job opportunities. That means a number of things. We need to rebuild our government to be every bit as honest and hardworking as the people who pay for it. That's us. Second, we need to keep us both beautiful and profitable. We can do both, but we have to protect our natural resources. That means shutting down Line 5. And third, we need to create a place where we can stay and succeed and by investing in protecting our greatest assets, our people, our land, and our Great Lakes. You know, that means bringing high-speed internet and mobile cell phone service to our communities. That means returning passenger rail service. That means showing the world how to use and protect fresh water. We've done it before. We did it with mining. We did it with fur trade. We did it with lumber. It's time for us to figure out what's next, and let's get to it.
Jerry Cannon?
Well, Dave, thanks for having us today. My story is not unique. There are countless examples of people who came from disadvantaged circumstances and overcame them and ended up being successful. I was raised by my Irish immigrant grandmother who taught me many things. A couple of them are know who you are and know where you're from. And don't forget about the people that helped you achieve your level of success. Don't be part of the problem. I'm not part of the problem. I am a problem solver. I know how to bring people together and to get things done. And I've got unparalleled experience to do that. And so I'm not a politician. I'm not an ideologue. I'm not connected to any political party or political machine. I'm not an insider. I'm certainly not big money. And I'm certainly not part of the problem. I would ask the listeners to look at the candidates for Congress and examine their body of work. I think a great predictor of the future is what people have done in the past. Look at their education. Look at their community involvement. And ask yourself, do they share our values? Do they have the real-world experience to make realistic and sensible decisions at the national level? When we look at the complexity of the federal government, I think voters should think twice about a candidate who has absolutely no experience in government at any level. And I think that they should have some experience in public finance, in foreign and military affairs. And so I'm a proud public servant. I've been doing this for 50 years. People have counted on me to step up, get involved, to serve and protect. I've done this gladly. I'm ready, willing, and able to do this again. And I would ask, I don't expect people to support me, but I'm willing to earn their trust and their support. And I ask for their vote in August. Thank you.
I'd like to thank both of you guys for agreeing to come in. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
This has been special election coverage on IPR News Radio. Join us next Friday for another live forum, just like this one, this time, though, with the Republicans running for Congress. Thank you to reporter Morgan Springer, who helped produce the show and ran the phones. Thanks to Aaron Selbig, who engineered this hour. Peter Payette is our executive producer. I'm David Castleman, and you're listening to Interlochen Public Radio, WICA, Traverse City, 91.5 FM, WLMN, Manistee, Ludington, 89.7 FM, WHBP, Harbor Springs, Petoskey, 90.1 FM. We are online at IPR News Radio. Have a great weekend.